This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
What's going on, everybody? Thanks for joining us. This is the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings alongside Michael Lombardi. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. I know it has been a pretty chaotic 24 hours in our country, but the beauty of what we do and what this show is that we can be that escape for you this morning on a Sunday. And I hope that that is the case for the next 2 hours. We are talking nothing but sports, nothing but football, and at times whatever other random stuff pops into our head, like the fact, Michael, that I am not used to doing a Sunday show with you. It's been a minute.
Wow.
And that alarm clock came early.
This is impressive. It just shows you what a great team player. But first of all, let's at least acknowledge that Stormy had a birthday yesterday. And I know that it's not always popular to celebrate birthdays, especially when you're as old as I am. But I want to wish you a happy birthday. I'm sure everybody at the crew has. And we appreciate you coming in on a Sunday to join us in the off season, especially considering that you don't take many days off even after your birthday. So happy birthday and thank you for coming in.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And for as hard as a worker I am, you actually worked on your birthday. So I still can't compete or contend with you in that area. But it was really nice, Michael, to have a day of just like relaxing, doing nothing, no obligations, no makeup, which is always a chore. It was a glorious day from that standpoint of just chilling on my couch.
What could you do, though? I mean, I think what people don't understand about you, we live in Las Vegas, right? Okay, well, I live in New Jersey, and there's some days you can't go outside. It's too cold, or snow. But you can't go outside. It's too hot. I mean, like, literally, this is like winter for you in a reverse sense of it. It's kind of counterintuitive, but I mean, how could you go out at 120 degrees and enjoy yourself? It's kind of hard.
Yesterday, Michael, we actually had rain here. Oddly enough, in July in Las Vegas, we had some rain, which cooled things down a little bit. But you're right. It has been scorching freaking hot here lately. And I expect it's going to be today, which, you know, this is a good question, I think, because you mentioned it gets cold, obviously, where you are at times. What would you prefer? What's the worst scenario for you? 110 or 10? Which degree scenario is worse?
Well, the 110, I'm not going out. The 10, my fingers are frozen all the time. I probably would take the 110.
Okay.
Because when you're cold, I mean, I go through so much sugar-free hot chocolate, it's ridiculous because I'm trying to warm up. I mean, it's here. What in New Jersey, the problem where I live is the wind coming off the ocean. So if it's 10, it says it's 10. It's really minus 10 because the wind is always in your face. I've said this to you before. When I turned 17 and could drive, I threw that bicycle right in the trash. Like, I was not riding it into the wind anymore. I was done with it, you know, no matter where you go. Like, even this morning, if you go on your bike and ride on the boardwalk and you have the Atlantic Ocean over to your left and you're riding feeling good, the wind's in your face. It's a soft wind. It's a warm wind, but it's still in your face. You got to pedal harder. And then what always happens is when you turn to go the other way, you think, oh, I got the wind behind me. No. The wind shifts direction. So now it's back in your face again.
Yes.
So I think I would rather have the hot. I think the long-winded answer, I'd rather have the hot.
Okay, I would as well. And it's interesting too, especially as a sideline reporter, I go through all different weather, terrain, all of that stuff. The level of excitement I feel when I get to work in a dome is unlike anything else. So I totally get it. I get why quarterbacks feel that way. I get why Jared Goff has a different level of success in a dome, because it is a different feeling and I get super excited about it, which I think that's a good transition. Let's get into some football here because, like we've been doing the last couple weeks, we have a poll that has been posted at M Lombardi NFL on X. So your Twitter account up there, on which team is the biggest threat to the Kansas City Chiefs in the AFC. Last week, we had this discussion throughout the course of the week in the NFC. Today, the AFC. So we just posted this. I'm not going to look at the vote tally just yet, but I do want to get your opinion of the teams we posted up here, Michael, the Ravens, Bengals, Bills, and Houston Texans. Which way do you think our audience is going to lean today as they begin voting?
I think they're going to go to Joe Burrow. I think Joe Burrow has got a little bit of that chief killer in him, and he's been successful doing it. The Bengals have improved their team. There's still some questions at the right tackle position. You know, whether Mims is going to be a rookie starter or Trent Brown's going to get his butt in shape and be able to be a good player that he's very capable of being. I mean, Trent Brown could be one of the best tackles in the league if he was interested in doing so. So I think it's the Bengals' improvement defensively with Geno Stone, bringing back Von Bell. Their corner situation has been upgraded. Hopefully they can get the pass rush. Signing Sheldon Rankins inside to play defensive tackle, I think, certainly helps them. So I think overall it's the Bengals. I mean, look, last year I thought I really thought Joe Mixon lost his legs. I know he's down in Houston and everybody's excited for that, but he's going to have to revitalize his career a little bit. And, you know, I think Houston going from good to great is always challenging. So, and look, the Ravens, there's questions about can Zach Orr handle the defense? I think that's a fair question.
And obviously the Ravens were the top seed last year, lost because they got away from their identity in the AFC Championship game against the Kansas City Chiefs. Mm. Speaking of, we will talk to Jason LaConfora in hour two. 105.7 The Fan in Baltimore covers the NFL for the Washington Post. We'll also get into a little Kansas City Chiefs talk this hour with Aaron Ladd, a sports anchor at KSHB 41 in Kansas City. And also coming up in 15 minutes, we're going to do a little college football action. Yogi Roth is going to join us. And you'll notice for those of our visual television audience that see on the graphic, Big Ten Network, that is not a typo. The staple of the Pac-12 for however many years goes back is now going to be calling games on Big Ten Network. So a little bit of a different feel there with the way conference realignment has changed. Other news of the day, but real quickly, again, head over to M. Lombardi NFL. Make sure you get your votes in. If the team that you like in the AFC is not in that batch of four, get in the comments. I don't even know what over under we should set on the amount of people that are going to throw the Jets in there or Tua in the Miami Dolphins. So that'll be a whole fun conversation a little bit later. But other news I want to get to here, Michael, a big one, especially you from the general manager perspective, is in the NBA. Knicks star Jalen Brunson agreeing to a four-year, $156.5 million contract extension. However, him doing this deal now as opposed to next year, it means it's $113 million less than he would have been guaranteed eligible to sign for next season. What was your first thought when you saw this news come through with Jalen Brunson and the Knicks?
I think it really shows you what kind of guy he is, what kind of player. I mean, $100 million is hard to sneeze at, but I think he wants to win a title. I think that's clearly what he wants to do, and I think all our careers are identified by championships that we win. I mean, it's one thing, how much money is enough money, right? I mean, how much money does LeBron need? Now, he's won titles, but I think to me what he's saying to his teammates is, look, I'm not going to be the guy who eats all the macaroni. I'm not going to be the guy that takes all the money. I want to be part of a winning team. And that goes a long way towards building chemistry and camaraderie within the organization. So my hat's off to him. What a great kid. Now, I'm sure he's going to get it. The next time he can get an incentive, he can get it. He will. But at some point, you know, I think to me, winning becomes even more important than all that money. He'll eventually get it. I think he'll earn it. And I'm sure he feels like his career is going to go for another contract at least.
This is the complete opposite, right, of the disease of me that we talk with so many teams. This is not the norm in pro sports. But even as Adrian Wojnarowski said this week after the news came down, Brunson's study of championship organizations and franchise stars, looking at guys like what Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady and even Derek Jeter have done, said it gave him a blueprint for the MVP level players who structured contracts to give their teams the best chances at sustainable title runs. And you look at what they did this offseason already, bringing in a guy like Mikal Bridges. Well, now they'll have an opportunity to re-up that contract, to extend a guy like Julius Randle, to potentially add other pieces. And if I'm a major organization or company in New York and Jalen Brunson just did that, I am putting him on the face of every billboard. I'm having him do all this. We're going to make him his money in another way. This dude is a star. Let's support him as he's trying to bring us a title. Because, I mean, when's the last time New York has had a title, right? Like the Yankees in 09, it's been a minute. The 76ers are trying to claw their way to the top to be that team.
And you just hit the nail on the head. I think to me, there's other avenues to make money, right? There's other avenues to position yourself to have a future. And when you're in New York City, there are ample opportunities. And look, you know, he could get to some sound investment advice from someone, and I'm sure he's going to make some money doing that. But also, he's going to carry a team friendly guy around him, and teamwork is what all these companies want. So I think Brunson's going to be a popular figure in New York because of what he did for the team. And when you're unselfish like this, it goes a long, long way. And I applaud him for it. But it's part of who the Knicks have become, their culture, right? I mean, these Villanova kids that they bring in there from Jay Wright, it's kind of how they grew up. It's kind of what they've been taught. And that's what they believe. They believe the sum of all of us is better than than just one. And I think Brunson, as great as he is, understands that.
The Nova Knicks, third shot is short on the Eastern Conference odds board. The Boston Celtics, defending title champs, plus 145 favorites. The 76ers, plus 425. Also, my first thought, by the way, was how did his agent let him do this? Then you look up his agent's name. Sam Rose, Knicks president's son. Okay, it starts to make a little bit more sense as to why he might have been willing. We are going to turn the page to college football after our next time out. We're going to get into a little bit of the Pac-12, Pac-2 situation. They had their media days out here in Vegas actually the other day, and it was pretty funny. Ross Dellinger tweeted, "The Pac-12 is holding a scaled-down media event with an open bar here in Vegas. Commissioner Teresa Gold opens the event by gesturing to the bar. We're drinking tonight. If anyone has earned the right to drink, it's the Pac-12. You are not wrong, Commissioner Gold. You are not wrong. Obviously, Oregon State and Washington State there, but a lot of movement as this league splintered in a major way, where the Big 12 has four new members in Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado, and of course, Big 12 favorite in their first year, the Utah Utes. The Big 10 looks very different with Oregon, who's the second shortest shot in that league, by the way. USC, UCLA, Washington there. And then in the ACC, can't wait for the great rivalry of Stanford and Syracuse, coast to coast, and Cal, who is literally, I mean, California is in the name, yet they're in the Atlantic Coast Conference. It is a different animal, but very excited to talk to Yogi Roth coming up next. He's covered the Pac-12 for such a long time. He is so dialed in. Get the lowdown from how these teams will look and perform in their new conferences. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The NFL preseason is right around the corner, ladies and gentlemen. And lucky for you, our VSiN experts have been hard at work all offseason putting together our new VSiN NFL betting guide. This thing has comprehensive team profiles with power ratings and win total predictions, proven betting systems and trends like how to win using betting splits, plus top picks for season win totals, futures, props, awards markets, and so much more. But to access this guide, you need to be a VSiN Pro subscriber. And for a limited time, we're offering a great deal to get a full year of VSiN Pro. It's just $199 instead of the usual $240 price. And as a special bonus, we're throwing in an extra month for free. So that's 13 months of access to everything VSiN has to offer, in addition to the guide, best bets, round-the-clock video content, premium analysis, exclusive betting splits, and so much more. Head to VSiN.com/subscribe now and use our promo code Lombardi to cash in on the discount and get 13 months of VSiN Pro. That's VSIN.com/subscribe and use our promo code Lombardi. Also, the college football betting guide will be out here before you know it. And let's talk some college football now as we near the end of one of the most transformative off seasons in the history of the sport. No league, by the way, had more volatility than the Pac-12. And to help us break it all down, we bring in Yogi Roth on the Progressive guest line. Has been the face and voice of the Pac-12 for years. Just launched his new podcast, Why Option, looking at college football through the lens of the West Coast. Check out whyoption.com. And we'll be calling games for the Big Ten Network this season as an analyst. And I mean, just start there, Yogi. Like, does it feel like cheating? I feel like there's been this conference network rivalry for such a long time. Big Ten Network, how's that sound to you?
Sounds great. Sounds great hearing your voice as well. Thanks for having me on the show. Happy weekend. I mean, you could use a plethora of words: volatile, transition, miserable, guttural. I mean, there's a lot to go through there. Which I got to live through the last year, and yeah, through it all, I don't know about you. Like when I went through that, it was, you know, on a small scale of just talking about football and TV trauma. But as I went through it, I really got clear on what mattered most to me. And it's kind of been the same thing for almost 20 years, which is the games and the players who wear them, you know, wear those helmets, to take them off, tell the stories and celebrate the game every Saturday. So I'm stoked to do it on the Big Ten Network. Obviously miserable that over 200 people lost their jobs at the Pac-12 Network, no fault of their own. I vouch and get on the table for every one of them. I think we did it as well as anybody in TV. And the sad part is another conference didn't come from this, so everybody doesn't have a job. So that's kind of where I go. So I'm happy. I'm stoked. I'm also really proud of the launch Y option, as you referenced. Like, all those places went to the ACC and the Big 12 or the Big 10. They're not going to have their stories told in the capacity that they did, you know, over the last 12 years. So I said, you know, I've been doing it for a long time. Why would I stop? I'm going to talk about college football through the lens of the West Coast with those teams, but also for a Michigan fan, they want to learn about USC. Hopefully, you know, my podcast is a place that they'll be able to learn and glean a little insight from that.
Yogi, thank you for joining us on the show. I know your experience with the Pac-12. You know the Oregon program really well. Recently, Dylan Gabriel's Heisman odds have shifted dramatically to he's almost the favorite, if not the favorite, to win the Heisman. What's your take on Oregon as they enter into the Big Ten, and can they uproot what Ohio State seems to be building a national championship team?
Yeah, no, I think they can. This train is not slowing down. You know, it's always been a proud program, as you all know. I think Mario Cristobal got the recruiting going again in terms of physicality standpoint. Dan Lanning's taking it to another planet. And they're going to be, I think, you know, part of the class of college football that gets talked about, you know, every single weekend. I think Dan Lanning is going to take up a lot of the space that Jim Harbaugh and Nick Saban left. You know, our sport doesn't really have a face anymore. You know, when you think about how long Nick Saban was there and the juice that Jim Harbaugh had. And I say that even like when you're pitching documentaries in the offseason and talking to people about college football, you know, with the all the quarterbacks that left last year, I'm really kind of wondering, who's it going to be? And I think it's going to be Dan Lanning and Dylan Gabriel. I was just with Dylan at the Elite 11 finals a couple weeks ago. He's an incredible young man. I mean, sixth year in college football, there's really nothing he hasn't seen. His third team, he went from being under-recruited, and his only offer was one of the academies, to UCF, Oklahoma, and then, of course, now at Oregon. I think he's going to thrive. He's got qualities that I've seen at Elite 11 from some of the best quarterbacks, I think, in recent history. He's got an it factor like Tua Tagovailoa. So the guy just gravitates towards him. He's got a confidence to him that reminds you a little bit of Jameis Winston. And he's got a pure pass. He's got a pure arm. Remind you a little bit of Trevor Lawrence. Like, he's just pure. He's not the biggest of guys, as we know, but he's always played the position at the size that he's always been at. And I just think he's got a unique trait to him that's going to allow this team to really pick up where they left off under Bo Nix. So I think they're going to ball. I hope that he's in New York City. He has had a great year and he stayed healthy. But he's an impressive young man. Those two guys are going to take up a ton of real estate when it comes to college football this fall.
And he is a co-favorite right now with Georgia's Carson Beck, 8-1 for the Heisman Trophy. Oregon's the fourth shortest shot to win a national title in 2024-25. I also wanted to ask you specifically about Washington State and Oregon State. I know you were there at after hours with the Beavs and Cougs at the Bellagio this past week. And it feels like it doesn't feel like they are. They're the odd men out in the league that weren't able to find a home elsewhere. They are going to be playing a Mountain West schedule. And I'm curious your opinion on that, because typically when you think of big conference programs picking up a schedule like that, the obvious thought is, oh, they're going to run through it. But the Mountain West is more competitive. Boise State, Fresno State, even UNLV right now under Barry Odom, these aren't all gimme games across the board. How do you think that those schedules will play out for Washington State and Oregon State this year?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I mean, you know that league and that part of the country better than anybody. And as do the coaches, right, in terms of Jake Dickert having coached in that league, the head coach of Washington State. And he said it, you know, at the media event that you referenced, which was, there's a lot of places in the Mountain West that are more challenging than some of the places recently in the Pac-12. Like, I think UCLA and Cal and Stanford, places that really struggle filling their stadium. That's not the case when you go to Fresno, when you go to Boise, you know, when you go to some of these schools they're going to have to face, especially on the road. So it'll be a challenge. I do think that they're more talented. You know, you just look at recruiting and the roster that they have and, you know, the windfall from being in a Power 5 league. Even when you look at the transfer, you know, more players left Oregon State, at least key players. But for Washington State, not really. You know, they lost their quarterback, but everybody kind of assumed he was either going to the NFL or somewhere else. But other than that, they're pretty intact. So I'm pretty bullish on the Cougs, especially the way their schedule lays out. You know, they get to play Washington early on. Washington's a complete rebuild under Jed Fish, which I believe in, but it's not going to happen overnight. And I think the Cougs got a shot to go get that. And also to beat Texas Tech at home. If they do that, they're going to be America's team. same for Oregon State. I mean, the one thing I took away from media days was I had this theory that everybody in the media, while we can't necessarily root for people, we're all going to root for these two teams. And there's over 50 media members in the room, Stormy. I mean, it was rocking in there. There was a big time, high profile writers, journalists, broadcasters, et cetera. And that sentiment was met. I think everybody's pulling for them because they got, you know, I'm trying to think of an appropriate word, but like what happened to them was they deserve it. Because all they've done is do what a lot of teams in the country haven't done, which is win. They've won relatively consistently. Big bowls, their first round draft pick coming out of Oregon State last year. It's not like they've been getting drilled in their conference. You can look at other conferences around the country and pretty easy to think about which Power Five teams struggle in Power Five leagues. These two teams haven't been that. So I think people are going to be rooting for them. I'll be on that bandwagon as well. And it was a fun way to, in a unique way to kick off their season in this year's campaign.
Yogi, have you had a chance to see Dylan Riola, the starting quarterback at Nebraska? I mean, he seems like he's a true freshman, but all the talk around him, it sounds like Caleb Williams when he was a young kid going to Oklahoma.
Oh, yeah. I think it's a pretty accurate assessment from a hype standpoint. Different type of player, different type of body. I'm going to be at Nebraska week three. Can't wait to call their game then and just see what it's all about there. I hadn't been there in 18 years. Last time I was there, I was coaching at USC, so can't wait to get to Lincoln. But he's got all the attributes. Arm talent is unique. Stature is, you know, he looks like he's a third-year player in college, not a freshman in college. Mindset seems pretty clear. And really the most important thing about these quarterbacks, I learned over the course of the time at Elite 11, I wrote a book called Five-Star QB. So much about these big-time quarterbacks is the community around them. You know, it really is. Like, what is the coaching staff like? What's the support staff like? Now, what's their family like? What's the agent representation like? What's the ecosystem around NIL and people chirping in their ear if things get a little challenging? Should they dip immediately? Like, how are they handling their social media? Are they paying attention to it or is there somebody else doing it? I think he's got a really healthy system in place around him. So I think he'll play well. I know it's not a landslide and the competition isn't over. But I think when I look at the other two quarterbacks he's competing against, his unique traits, which is the one thing I always go to when I'm looking at a quarterback and evaluating it, and trying to answer that question, what is it? His unique trait is one that stands out, which is why I think he'll end up winning the job.
Yogi, and you did a great job, obviously, with the book, everything you do with the Elite 11 camps. So excited to check out the Why Option podcast again, whyoption.com. There is such an appetite for West Coast football fans like myself for that type of a product. Thank you for the time, and thanks for all that you do for the sport, buddy.
Yeah, we got to get you on.
Thank you, Yogi.
I'm ready. Yeah. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We're rocking and rolling on this Sunday edition of the Lombardi Line. Thanks for hanging out with us, Michael Lombardi and Stormy Bonatoni with you. Really appreciate Yogi Roth stopping by with us in the last segment. I feel like, Michael, whenever we have guests like him on that are so good and so knowledgeable about the thing that they are involved with, I have 100 questions and we're never able to get to them all.
Yeah.
And I do genuinely feel, and you tell me if you agree as an East Coast guy, I feel like there is an appetite for a little more knowledge now about those West Coast programs, to his point about the way that they're joining all of these leagues. People have, like, I feel like the West Coast is kind of like the redheaded stepchild of the college football game at times. And so being able to have that knowledge with the Why Option podcast, I think will be a really cool thing for fans.
You know, I think what's happened is because the Pac-12 never really adjusted to the time difference, that so much of the country never got to see some really good football out there unless they watched the highlights. And that's been unfortunate. And I think a lot of it was the programming. Yes, I know they wanted to play night games at Tucson, night games in Phoenix, night games up in Pullman. But to me, a 7:30 kick in Pullman is a 10:30 start here on the East Coast, and people have been watching football from 12 o'clock. And I think that they didn't really understand the audience, and they needed to have that 4 o'clock window. That 7:30 East Coast window needed to be West Coast football. And now they're going to have it. And I think that's what's going to make people more interested and more involved in these programs. Look, everybody loves watching great football. It's just hard to watch it at midnight.
Yeah, well, I joked in our commercial break, Christian McCaffrey never stood a chance for the Heisman because of the East Coast and
nobody
SEC.
Saw him.
Yeah, nobody saw him. Nobody saw him. And that's, you know, it's you break Barry Sanders' record, you think somebody would see you, but apparently that's not the case. And so I think it's a really good thing, as much as it's tough as a diehard sports fan and somebody that, I mean, I love so much about college football is the history and the tradition and all of those things. And the Pac-12 is a league that's lasted longer than a century. And so it stinks not to have that name attached anymore to the conference. But I think a lot of excitement potentially in the future and seeing the way some of those teams fit in other leagues will be fun. We didn't even talk to him about Utah, Michael, which, you know, I love so much. So I'll have to sidebar with Yogi a little bit later.
I know. I mean, that's the thing. There were so many questions to get to. We didn't really even explore what the changes at Michigan. You know, I wanted to hit Nebraska's a team that I'm fascinated by because of the quarterback and because of how highly recruited he was. And obviously Matt Rhule's second season there. But there's so many teams and that how is SC and Lincoln Riley going to adapt to the physicality of the Big Ten? I mean, that's going to be interesting for me. And where is UCLA's program? You know, they lost Moore, their five-star recruit. Chip Kelly leaves to take an assistant coaching job. You know, they bring in Eric Bieniemy back in from the NFL. And so it's just, to me, there's 1,000 things to talk about. I thought it was fascinating, though, in the conversation, Stormy, about the dedication and the kind of unity that Washington State and Oregon State have. And I agree with them. I think that Washington game for Washington State is probably going to be their Super Bowl.
More people are certainly going to be rooting for those teams to have success because they have been put in the situation that they are. Always fun to talk college football. We might be able to get a little bit more later on in the program, but let's go back to our poll of the day. If you haven't seen it already, at M Lombardi NFL on X, Michael posted a poll, which team is the biggest threat to the Kansas City Chiefs to win the AFC? So far, Michael's prediction of it being the Bengals has been correct. 42% of the 500 voters in there so far are buying the 7-1 on Cincinnati. 33% rolling with the Baltimore Ravens at +550. The Texans getting 14.2% of the vote and the Buffalo Bills at 11%. Meanwhile, I expected we would get a lot more Jets love in the comments. Have not seen a ton of it yet, but I do want to talk to you about this New York Jets team, because I haven't seen you since the Aaron Rodgers quote at the American Century Championship started making the rounds. And for anybody who missed it, let's play this audio. Aaron Rodgers was asked about his former teammate in Green Bay, Davante Adams, under Luke Getsy in Las Vegas, and this was his response.
You think Luke Getsy's going to utilize Davante Adams good in the new Raiders offense?
I love Luke Getsy. He's a fantastic coach.
Awesome.
And I love Davante. I can't wait to play with him. Again.
Michael, I thought we were avoiding distractions. I thought we were all football. We're not talking. We're not using our mouths. We're not doing. What is happening here?
Well, I think Aaron knows, as I know, that Davante Adams wants to redo his deal. He missed the entire offseason program at the Raiders, and he came in for minicamp, did very little. And so I think, to me, the Raiders have to adjust it. Tyreek Hill's contract is getting a ton of popularity in terms of, because his agent and he have come out publicly and said they want to redo. Davante hasn't done that publicly. He's done it privately. And so I think Aaron knows that. And look, there were people that were interviewing for the GM job that came into Las Vegas that one of the things they suggested to Mark Davis were to trade Davante Adams because they could get the most value for him at this time, take away some of the cap burden on him, and allow and still be good skill-wise around him with what they had. And so they said no to all the GM candidates who wanted to do that, and they've kept on to them. But they're going to have to redo this deal at some point because of the wide receiver market. And, you know, and I think the Raiders are probably not sure how to handle this, or do they want to actually do it? It's a little bit like Matthew Stafford. Yeah, he's still a good player, but how much does he have left? All those things. So something to bear. And I think that comment is a little bit more than just, oh, fly by night. I can't wait to play with him again, because I truly believe that if the Jets can resolve the Hassan Riddick contract, they would move on to Davante. Look, the Jets are all in. The Jets are all in. If they don't win this year, everybody knows they're getting fired. They're going to start all over. And why not? Now, it'll be a mess to clean up if they don't win. Get Grant, don't misunderstand me there, but the Jets are all in.
And if, I mean, you'd have to be blind this past football season watching Devontae Adams and not seeing the clear frustration on his face. It felt like week in and week out. Even watching the wide receiver Netflix documentary series this season, even with the relationship that he clearly has with Antonio Pierce, you could still sense the frustration of his role and how things shook out during the year. So it's just, is that, I mean, you tell me, Michael, is that even a financial like possibility in New York, though, from a dollars and cents standpoint?
Well, it is. I mean, look, it depends on the owner's tolerance for how much cash he wants to spend. Certainly it is. You know, they could, you can make the cap number anything you want to make it if you redo the deal and spread it out with options and, you know, and voidable years and yada, 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 all that. So, yes, it is. But to me, what does it add to the team? I mean, Garrett Wilson's a really good player, and he's going to be the focal point of the Jets offense. And he has to be because he is the best player they have there. So I can't imagine that, you know, it would add value. But look, who thought that? I mean, in all honesty, who thought that, you know, signing Alan Lazard was going to add great value and they paid him? You know, they got to see where they are with Mike Williams, because right now they have Xavier Gibson, Mike Williams, and Garrett Wilson. They're the starting receivers. Now, they drafted Corley in the third round. Is he going to be ready? Frankly, not question is he going to be ready. Is Rodgers going to trust a third round pick in 24 to throw him the football? Is he going to trust a college free agent in Gibson to throw the ball? See, this is where I don't think fans really understand that it takes trust. Brady, for a lot of years, struggled to throw the ball to Edelman. You know, it took a long time for that relationship to develop between Brady and Edelman, where Brady trusted Edelman to run the routes the way he wanted them run, to be able to fit within the framework of the offense. And it wasn't anything against Edelman. It was just based on all trust. I've got the ball. I got to trust you. You and I have to be completely in line. And Rodgers has that same mechanism within his framework of play.
It would just be complete insanity if Devontae Adams also somehow ended up there. Plus, between him and Garrett Wilson, will the real 17 please stand up? Season win total for the New York Jets sitting at 9.5. It is juiced to the over at -150.
I think Wilson changed his number to 5, though.
Oh, did he?
I think he changed his number to 5, yeah. And I think Corley's wearing 17 now. So Corley might have to give it up.
There we go. Jets +190, second shot in the AFC East. They're 11-1, sixth in the AFC, -160 to make the playoffs, +135 to miss. Rodgers, by the way, his passing yards and passing touchdowns prop do present some intrigue. 3,800.5 yards passing, 26.5 passing touchdowns. His last season in Green Bay had 3,795 in yardage, 26 touchdowns in 17 games. Prior to that, though, I was just looking through his career statistics, Michael. Every season that Aaron Rodgers has played 15 plus games in his career, so 12 years, he went over that yardage, and 10 of those 12 years, he went over the touchdown. So if he does stay healthy, that offensive line does stay healthy, that's got overs written all over it, no?
Well, that's why we're calling him the ifers, because he is going to go over it if he's healthy. I mean, you know, if Tyron Smith stays healthy, if John Simpson's a good player. But, yeah, look, I think the one thing that was misconstrued on Hard Knocks is Pat Mahomes couldn't play behind this line. Great quarterbacks get rid of the football. Rodgers won't take many sacks. He'll get mad. He'll get the ball will come out of his hand. But health is more than the offensive line here for me.
And all reports do indicate on Rodgers' side, he is fully healthy headed into this training camp that we're about, 8 days away from now in New York. We're going to hit the break. More Lombardi Line coming up after this quick timeout.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back here on the Lombardi Line, remember, start your morning with a daily dose of winning strategies, insider tips, and the latest buzz with the VSiN Daily Newsletter. Bill AD, each and every day, up early, locked and loaded with all the need-to-know information for the day, as well as just picks galore. We know how much you care about those, but getting you set, vsin.com/newsletter. If you don't have it, what are you doing? Alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you. Continuing our AFC theme for the day, the poll is up on Michael's Twitter at MLombardiNFL. Who will be the biggest threat to the Kansas City Chiefs in the AFC this year? And we thought it'd be a good idea to go through how a lot of these AFC contenders in 2024-25 finished their season last year in the playoffs. And we're going to start with the Miami Dolphins as they ended their season in the wild card round against the Kansas City Chiefs in what is this? The fourth coldest playoff game in NFL history. Remember back, you have the vision of Andy Reid's mustache in the cold, Patrick Mahomes' helmet breaking, water bottles freezing. It's all coming back to me now. And with the result, Kansas City blows out Miami 26-7. It's no secret Miami had a lot of injuries at that time, but in this cold loss, Miami has still not won a playoff game since 2000, second longest active playoff drought, only to the Lions, who have a chance, who, you know, obviously bucked that trend last year. 0-11 in kickoff temperatures below 40 degrees. So obviously, like, it's no secret, Michael, this team playing in the cold cannot do it.
No, they can't. And their quarterback's not cold weather either. I mean, look, they for all their explosiveness offensively, their ability to throw and deal in cold weather is not something that Tua did. I've said this since his rookie season when he went into Nashville on a rainy day against the Titans. And in the first quarter, when it started to really come down, he couldn't throw the football. I don't think he can throw the ball effectively. 39 attempts for 199 yards. But in fairness to Miami here, this wasn't the Miami Dolphins, right, particularly defensively when you look at them. I mean, Bradley Chubb doesn't play. You know, they're playing a bunch of backups in the front seven, and Kansas City had decided at this point in their season to become a run team, which was something that we weren't familiar with. I mean, Isaiah Pacheco averaged 14 carries during the regular season. In this game, he got 24 carries. So it was bad timing by Miami. But even if Miami's at full strength, right, I just don't think they're going to be able to compete in this weather. And if you take away the 53-yard touchdown pass that Tyreek Hill was able to get against man coverage, I mean, they have 38 attempts for basically 150 yards. So they just couldn't make a play down the field. The next longest pass play, Stormy, in the game was 19 yards.
Crazy. Again, 26-7 the final. So the Chiefs won in cover as a 5-point favorite in that game. Miami 1-6 down the stretch against 2023 playoff teams. They failed to score 22 points or more in any of them, which we talked so much about this being a high-flying, record-setting offense that fell apart against good teams. And that is, I think, a cause for concern moving ahead this season as well.
No question. You know, and I think to me, once Mike McDaniels declared who he was offensively, then teams started to get a read. Look, here's the reality of Tua. He's an RPO quarterback, and he throws the ball to certain locations on the field, and it's impossible to cover Tyreek Hill. We get that. You got to jam him. You got to take him out. They do a wonderful job of motioning him and creating spots for him on the field. But at the end of the day, Tua's shot chart, which is like an NBA shooter in basketball, where do they like to shoot the ball? Yeah. Well, we know where Tua wants to throw it. As bad as Philly was, nobody mentions this, as bad as Philly was down the stretch defensively, they stonewalled Miami in Philadelphia. It was ugly, partly because of their pressure up front, partly because they understood how to handle Tua. So I think this is part of the holdup on Miami as well, Stormy. I think Miami has had cold water thrown on their face. They're going to say they love Tua. They're going to say they want he's their guy and they want to pay him. But they also understand his limitations. Mm-hmm. Let's not kid ourselves. They don't think this is a slam dunk. He's going to lead us to the mountaintop. They're going to be supportive. But they're like I am in the sense that he has strong points, which he does. But he has weak points, which he does.
If and when that contract comes through, what will it be? We'll see. Win total for the Miami Dolphins this season set at 9.5. They are the third shot in the AFC East, but very narrow there. Plus 200, the number, minus 155 to make the playoffs. Let's go to the Houston Texans here, who blow out the Browns in shocking fashion to open their playoff season. Then, of course, follow that up by facing the Baltimore Ravens, who were just a next level team. It was close at halftime until it wasn't close anymore. 34-10, the final for Baltimore in this spot, ended up being the first time the Ravens made it to the AFC Championship since their 2012 Super Bowl season. But your lasting impression on the Houston Texans following this game, impressive as it was for them to win a division, make the playoffs, have a playoff win. The way things ended for Houston, what was your lasting impression?
Well, I think Houston did a really good job in this game. They came into it and they played something that they were not accustomed to. I think they caught Jeff Monken and the Baltimore Ravens offensive staff off guard. That's why the score is 10-10 at halftime. I think they blitzed way more than they were going to blitz. They were clearly changing who they were defensively, which caught Baltimore kind of like, oh, is this what they want to do in the game? And once they figured out how to handle that in the second half, Houston couldn't have an alternative plan to go to. And it spiraled downhill. Mm-hmm. And they did a wonderful job of taking Darryl Singletary out of the game. He had 9 carries for 22 yards. They couldn't run the ball. 14 carries for 38 yards overall. So it became a one-dimensional game. And when they took Nico Collins away, that became problematic. So, look, this was about Houston did what they felt like they needed to do defensively to slow down this Baltimore Raven attack, and it worked in the first half. But in the second half, Lamar still gained 100 yards rushing. You know, Justin Hill had 66 yards. Gus Edwards was still average 4 yards a carry and only had 9 for a long. So they were able to recover. I think Houston can build on it, and I think we're going to see more of Houston's diversity defensively after this game because they've added pieces that can allow them to expand their role defensively.
No question about it, and kudos for what D'Amico Ryans was able to do with that unit last year. The Texans won as many games in 2023-24, including the playoffs, as the previous 3 seasons combined. Also in the divisional round, we remember it well, and a couple words that have haunted the Bills for a while now. Wide right came through once again. Buffalo had the opportunity to host Kansas City, thought maybe this was their year, that moment. Tyler Bass ends up missing that 44-yard field goal attempt. But as you said at the time, I remember he shouldn't have been in that situation in the first place. What was your lasting impression from Buffalo in the divisional round?
The Buffalo, to me, it's it once again is, can they close out a game? I mean, I think that's really how they manage the game. I mean, think about this, Stormy. They have the 2-minute warning comes in, right? And they have 2nd and 9 at the Kansas City 26. The 2-minute warning had just come in. And they have a 2nd and 9. They ran the ball down to the 2-minute warning. And then they come back and they throw an incomplete pass and throw another incomplete pass. And then Bass misses the 44-yarder. At that point in the game, you've got to have 2 plays there where, look, this 44-yarder is not easy. Because if you remember in the first quarter, on the very first drive of the game, Buffalo took the ball down the field, moved it effortlessly down, and got into the red zone and stalled. And Bass came on the field to kick a field goal, and it was shaky. In fact, go back and listen to Jim Nance's call of that field goal. It's like, whoa, wait a minute. That was a tough one getting it through there. Yeah. And so as a head coach, you know, that was a 27-yarder. As a head coach, you're sitting there saying, look, at this end zone, at this part of the field, we have to be really careful because the wind is howling and it's only later in the day. So my lasting impression of the Bills is simply this. They played the team. They played the Chiefs better than anybody. They ran the ball for 180 yards. They threw it for 180. They moved it up and down the field. They did a ridiculous, stupid, fake punt, which they got bailed out on a turnover afterwards because of Hardman's fumbling the ball out of bounds. But they were the best team. They played the Chiefs the best in the playoff run, and they still fell short.
And, you know, revisiting this game, going through the stat sheet, it's if you're a Buffalo fan looking at the game stats, you're livid. Possessed the football for 14 more minutes of game time, outgained the Chiefs, total yards, no turnovers. Kansas City did. The Bills have won 58 games the last 5 seasons and haven't made it to the Super Bowl. That's tied with the 2017 to 2021 Saints for the most in a 5-year span without a Super Bowl appearance. They've lost in the divisional round each of the last 3 seasons, with 2 of those coming at home. And this other one also is going to sting my Josh Allen fans out there. Josh Allen and the Bills 0-4 against Mahomes and Burrow in the playoffs, despite being 5-0 against everybody else. And these are those three of the, you know, 4 young quarterbacks that we're going to be talking about from now and for years to come. And he has lost that battle, unfortunately, where things sit right now. Okay, we've got to take a quick timeout. When we come back, resetting for hour 2 of the Lombardi Line. Great conversation. We obviously didn't get to the Ravens. We obviously didn't get to the Chiefs' lasting impressions. Room for that in hour 2. Stay with us.